Ariana Grande is suing Forever 21 for $10 million, accusing the retailer of stealing her name and likeness to promote its products. In the complaint filed in federal court this week, Grande said Forever 21 published unauthorized images and videos to create the false perception that the pop star was endorsing the fast fashion brand.
Spanish fashion brand Zara, whose global reach includes retail stores in Hong Kong, sought to distance itself from the controversy there, saying it does not support the Hong Kong protests or latest student strike. The post came after a Hong Kong newspaper asked if the closure of four Hong Kong Zara stores on Monday was in support of the strike.
New data casts even deeper doubts over the UK economy. Retailers saw sales flatline in August as shoppers cut back. Out went non-essentials, though in, at least for some households, came food, as some nervous shoppers stockpiled supplies. Nervous over Brexit, that is, the key factor behind the political and economic uncertainty cited by the British Retail Consortium survey. And following on from Monday's PMI readings, which showed a dive in manufacturing, Tuesday saw the same reading published for UK construction.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to the program. Today is Wednesday. It's September the 4th, and it's 5:09 in the morning. Thank you for tuning in for another edition of The Opening Bell. We got another business day underway here now. Lots going on in the world. We're going to update the Brexit situation momentarily. Have some of the numbers from global stock markets as well this morning. As we kick off the day on the broadcast today, we're going to focus in on jails. The number of people in jail, the number of people who return to jail after they make their first visit there. A new report out says nearly a quarter of people who are booked into jail will return more than once a year. And our new first guest will be Emma Coleman, associate editor of Route 50, who's done some reporting on this. And it has some of the latest numbers. That'll be first up this morning, a little bit later in the program. International travel to the United States is declining, and that's causing lost revenue and jobs. The CEO of the U.S. Travel Association, Roger Dow, will join us in the second half of the broadcast this morning at about 5:38 to tell us what's going on and to share some concerns of the travel industry with us. That'll be coming up here on The Opening Bell. But first, let's begin on the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk. All eyes will be on Wall Street today after stocks kicked off a new month with a big drop on weak manufacturing data and continuing trade worries. The Dow Jones Industrials fell nearly 285 points yesterday to 26,118 amid investor concerns over new tariffs imposed by the U.S. over the weekend. Meanwhile, a report from the Institute for Supply Management showed U.S. manufacturing activity slowing last month for the first time in nearly 3 years. This morning, as we're looking at some of the markets around the world, futures in the U.S. are pointing toward opening gains a little bit later this morning, but the trend has been down over the last half hour or so. Dow futures are up 197 points. S&P futures are up more than 0.75%. NASDAQ futures are up more than 1% this morning. As we look around the globe, in Europe, in London, markets are up by nearly 0.5%. The FTSE up nearly 38 points. In Germany, up by nearly 1.25%. In France, up more than 1%. In Asia, markets are also in the green. In Hong Kong, up nearly 4%. The Hang Seng up 995 points. There's some news out of Hong Kong this morning, too, about whether or not that extradition bill will be pulled. It appears as though the leader there is going to pull that bill today that's been the subject of a lot of these violent protests there. We'll obviously have updates on that throughout the morning as well. In Japan, markets up just a fraction. In China, up nearly 1%. And oil in the United States is at $54.20 a barrel, which is up about 26 cents. A couple of big stories this morning as we begin. First, Brexit in the UK. Britain's parliament will attempt to defy Prime Minister Boris Johnson's Brexit plans today as lawmakers seek a way out of the impasse that has gripped the nation since the 2016 vote to leave the European Union. The House of Commons is confronting Johnson over his insistence that the UK leave the EU on October 31st, even without a withdrawal agreement to cushion the economic blow. Today, it will consider a measure that will try to block a departure without a deal. Johnson has said he will seek a general election if the lawmakers succeed, taking his message directly to the people in his bid to deliver Brexit come what may. Walmart has made a big announcement on guns. Walmart says it will discontinue the sales of certain types of guns and ammunition after two mass shootings at stores this summer. The retail giant announced it would no longer sell short barrel rifle ammunition and would halt handgun ammunition sales in sales altogether in Alaska. Walmart's also considering asking customers to no longer carry open firearms in stores. Similar message from Kroger, the grocery company, says customers should stop openly carrying firearms in its stores as well, including in states where that is allowed. A number of Tesla owners say they were locked out of their cars on Labor Day because of the electric cars app offline. The app was down for maintenance Monday night, but physical keys and fobs still worked. Even a smartphone should have worked as long as it was in Bluetooth range. However, some users were logged out of the app at the time it went down and couldn't log back in for hours, meaning that they didn't have the physical key with them. If they didn't have the physical key with them, they had to wait. Let's begin this morning with some new numbers on people in jail across the country, why they're there, how often they return. Emma Coleman is with us this morning, associate editor at Route50.com, and has done some extensive reporting about this. Emma, good morning. Welcome to the opening bell.
Hi, Steve. Thank you for having me.
This is an interesting report. Some of the numbers just jumped off the page at me. I'm surprised, first of all, how many people are in local jails on a regular basis, how many people are jailed across the country. Talk to us a little bit about this report, who did it, and why it's significant.
Yeah, so it is astounding when you look at the number of people who are held in local jails every day. It's over 600,000 people, which, when you compare that, is more than the population of Wyoming. So it's essentially like we're incarcerating an entire state just in local jails every day. So this report came out of the Prison Policy Initiative by two people, Alexi Jones and Wendy Sawyer, and it really looks at that number and tries to break it down. It tries to find out, it gives the first nationally representative number of the number of people who are coming back to jail more than once per year. So we know that 4.9 million people are arrested and booked into jail every year, but one in four of those people are going to come back, and almost 430,000 people will go to jail multiple times over the course of the year. So that's a population known as frequent utilizers.
Yeah, and that those numbers are all huge numbers, more than I would expect them to be. Why are people going back to jail so many times?
Yeah, so that was what really fascinated me about this report, was looking at that frequent utilizer population and seeing that about 60% of those people have substance abuse problems. About a quarter of them have no insurance, and a lot of them have mental health problems. So at its core, this is really a mental health and health crisis, because that frequent utilizer population often just has jail as the last resort, and they're being arrested for crimes of poverty, things like retail theft. A lot of them are nonviolent offenses like public drunkenness or violation of probation and parole terms. So it really is, you see, just an issue with a lot of these people being poor, being targeted by police, not really having anywhere to go. There's also a very clear racial element of this. Most of these people are Black and have lower educational attainment. So there really are just a lot of factors that go into this.
88% of people arrested more frequently booked on nonviolent offenses. That would help to explain the overcrowding problem in many of our community jails, won't it?
Absolutely. If you look at Cook County Jail, there was a story from 2015 where a homeless man who was accused of stealing toothpaste spent over 300 days in the Cook County Jail because he didn't have a home that was eligible for electronic monitoring. So then you also sort of get into a cost factor, which is incarcerating people the best way that we could spend our resources? In that particular case, taxpayers paid over $44,000 on his lockup because it's expensive to house people in jails. And you sort of see that is a real problem of where are we investing our resources.
And so that's the big question. If $44,000 or $40,000 is a lot of money for one person, that money could be spent for other resources. Talk to us a little bit about what those other resources might be and how this money might be better spent.
Absolutely. So one thing that is really interesting is that this problem looks very massive when you sort of take this macro approach and you see that 612,000 people are arrested and booked in jails every day. But when you think about it on a smaller level, sometimes that number of frequent utilizers in a city can be really small. So, for example, Denver figured out that they had 250 people who were habitually coming back to jail, and they reinvested the resources that they would have put into the jail to grow it or to, you know, try and expand to deal with overcrowding problems, and they invested that money in a supportive housing program instead. So they got these people the housing resources they needed. They got them counselors for addiction and substance abuse issues. They helped them with job placement. And what one of the authors of the report, Alexi Jones, told me is that governments that invest in community drug treatment programs and better mental health services, they tend to see a 12-to-1 return on their investment. So for every dollar they're putting in, they're saving 12 in the future when they don't have to incarcerate people.
Yeah, and this all comes as there are many communities, and I know Cook County has gone through this over the last 5 or 10 years, where in Chicago, where we've cut the number of mental health facilities that are out there available to people to go and maybe even be rerouted to one of those facilities, combined with some of these other issues, that's making the problem worse.
Absolutely. It was in 2012 that Rahm Emanuel closed 6 out of the city's 12 publicly run mental health clinics. And often those were in places where they were the only mental health services available for their neighborhood. So that definitely has taken a toll.
Emma, as we pick up our conversation here, the number of people in jail on the county level is one thing, but this is also having an impact on state prisons as well, isn't it?
Yeah, there generally are too many people in jails and prisons, and you certainly see in state prisons, particularly parole and probation violations are filling them. There have been many states that have had to consider in recent years whether they should reform their terms of parole and probation or build, you know, entirely new prisons to hold all of these people. So you're absolutely right. It impacts on both a city, county, and state level.
In some cases, they are actually building those prisons. I know we've seen a couple of those projects go up across the country, and it's at least from a stock value, too. There are the private prison companies that are doing quite well these days on their stock shares. So that's another part. That's a whole other story as well. But I want to ask you, you know, you mentioned the situation in Denver where they're trying some new things. Are there other parts of the country that are trying new things? And what's been the success in Denver?
Yeah, so there are definitely other places. Camden, New Jersey is another example. Denver is in no way an isolated case, but they have been sort of at the forefront of this movement of trying to just provide a wraparound service for people who are coming out of jail. And I think the success rate in Denver has been, they've spoken about it largely in economic terms. They've said that they have invested less in the program than they would have spent on incarcerating these same 250 frequent utilizers who they identified. And in that, I think about half of the people had not returned to jail by the end of the first year, had found some sort of stable job, had really moved on and tried to work on bettering their lives with all of the support that they were getting. So they make their case in a lot of economic terms, but they also make it on a moral level that this is what is right to do for people who are really struggling.
Yeah, and that's, you bring up a point that we focus in on a lot on different stories here on this program, and that is the economics of things. Give us a sense of, first of all, not only the lost productivity. These folks are probably losing out on jobs in a tight job market where we need as many people as we can in the workforce. You'd think that perhaps private companies might have a stake in helping reform the situation.
Right. Jail will cut you off from, especially in these cases of people who need health care, it'll cut you off from any potential doctors you have or medication you might need. but it also can force you to lose your housing, and you can miss days at work and lose your job from that. So you're right in that it would make sense for private companies to be interested in helping out with this situation. And in some cases, they have been. Denver is run as a public-private partnership, so they do have private partners who are coming in on this and recognizing that it is impacting the job market. But as you mentioned, there's also a really strong economic incentive from private prisons to try and house as many people as possible.
Right, and some of those stock shares have been doing very, very well recently. So this report, and we're going to link out to your story and the report as well from the Prison Policy Initiative. I'm guessing they're hoping more communities see this and try to do something to stop some of this. What's the hope of this organization in sparking maybe some revitalization or some review or maybe even a renaissance in how we treat some of these people?
Right. So when I talked to one of the authors of the report, Alexi Jones, she mentioned that she really was hoping that Denver and other cases like that would serve as a model for communities that read this report and then think, you know, maybe we are thinking about this all wrong. In Cook County Jail, Tom Dart, the sheriff of Cook County, has called the jail a de facto mental hospital, and the past two people who he's hired to be wardens have been psychologists. And that has been that has led to a lot of good changes, has led to definitely some improvement in the mental health resources there. But it also sort of shows that we've accepted as a city that the system that is designed to have jail be the best place to get mental health care, you know, we don't have to necessarily accept that. And I think that's what the folks at the Prison Policy Initiative are really hoping, that people sort of come out of this acceptance of jail as the source of mental health care and think about how can we actually provide health care in the community.
Emma, we appreciate you being on with us this morning and sharing your reporting. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Emma Coleman, Associate Editor at Route50.com. Lots of news and analysis of policy innovations and everything else. State and local government is how they bill themselves. You can find them again at Route50.com. Follow them on Twitter as well at Route50. We're going to link out again to Emma's story and to this public policy new report that's out from the Prison Policy Initiative as well in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later this morning at WGNRadio.com.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here with us. It is Wednesday on The Opening Bell. We are working to get our next guest lined up and connected with us this morning. In the meanwhile, I want to let you know about some developing news. I mentioned this at the top of the broadcast from Hong Kong. The chief executive there, Carrie Lam, has announced this morning the government will formally withdraw an extradition bill that has sparked months of demonstrations in the city, bowing to one of the protesters' demands. The bill would have allowed Hong Kong residents to be sent to mainland China for trials. It sparked massive protests that have become increasingly violent, as it caused the airport to be shut down earlier this month, a number of people to be arrested and even injured. Lam said in a pre-recorded television message that the government would not accept other demands, including an independent inquiry into alleged police misconduct against protesters. However, she named two members to a police watchdog agency investigating the matter. Protesters have also called for the release of those detained without charges, but Lam said that was unacceptable. This morning, also, earnings. We mentioned in our local stocks report that Navistar International was reporting earnings today. The Lyle-based company says it had fiscal third-quarter profit of $156 million. The company had net income of $1.56 per share. Earnings adjusted for one-time gains and cuts were about $1.47 per share. The results exceeded Wall Street expectations. The average estimate of four analysts surveyed by Zacks Investment Research was for earnings of about $1.12 per share. So a good score for the truck and engine maker today, Navistar International. Full-year revenue range is expected now from Navistar, according to forward guidance, of between $11.25 billion and $11.75 billion. Navistar shares have decreased 16% since the beginning of the year, some of that impacted by trade and farm economy as well. The stock has decreased nearly 50% in the last 12 months. Working to connect our guests this morning, we're going to talk a little bit about travel, international travel to the U.S., at least we hope so. So stay tuned for that as we continue with the opening bell this morning. A couple of other stories making news this morning includes the ice cream maker Ben & Jerry's, which has unveiled a new flavor to highlight what it calls structural racism and a broken criminal justice system. Justice Remixed is described as cinnamon and chocolate ice cream with gobs of cinnamon, bun dough, and spicy fudge brownies. A portion of the proceeds support advancement of Project National Office, a multiracial civil rights group, and its fight for justice for all despite race or wealth. Facebook says it is ending its practice of using facial recognition software to identify users' friends in uploaded photos and automatically suggesting that they tag them. Instead, it is replacing the feature called Tag Suggestions with its broader face recognition setting, which identifies people's faces in photos for various uses, not just tagging. Beginning Tuesday, people who are new to Facebook or previously had the Tag Suggestion setting turned on will instead get face recognition setting, which they can turn on or off. People who had the Tag Suggestions setting turned off will see a notice about facial recognition and a button to turn it on or keep it off. Facebook was sued in Illinois over the Tag Suggestion feature, and a federal appeals court has ruled that lawsuit can move forward. There is a new report. International travel to the United States is down, and there is some concern about that moving forward. As a matter of fact, the latest report shows that international travel inbound to the United States contracted again in July, falling nearly 1.2%, the fourth month this year that international travel has tumbled to the United States. Joining us this morning as the CEO of the U.S. Travel Association, Roger Dow. Mr. Dow, good morning. Welcome to WGN.
Good morning. Good to be on the air with you.
So we mentioned those numbers going down 4 months this year that we've seen that happening. What's the reason for this?
The biggest reason is the strength of the dollar. We've seen this since 2015. Our dollar is just so strong, it's getting more expensive. Second reason, some weaker economies around the world. You're seeing that in Latin America, South America, parts of Europe. And the third, there's a great growth of low-cost carriers in Europe, and Europe is on sale to go anywhere except the United States.
Talk to us a little bit about how your organization wants to turn this around.
Well, one of the biggest things we want to do is there's something called Brand USA, which doesn't cost the taxpayers a dime, and it markets the United States with the travel industry, and people coming to the U.S. pay into it, and we need to get that reauthorized. It is a system where we can talk to everyone in the world through Brand USA, and it levels the playing field. It's so important for areas like Chicago because it allows you to market Chicago around the world. So we really need to get that done. We need more visa waiver countries. Vice President just announced that Poland is going into the visa waiver program, which will be great for Chicago.
Yeah, that makes it a lot easier for people to plan their trips and come without a problem. I wanted to ask you about the political part of this. Is there a sense that there's a political atmosphere in the United States that's keeping people away as well?
We're seeing some loud noise from the media around the world about the political atmosphere in the U.S., no question about it. However, our research shows that people separate politics and place. In other words, you and I will go to China, we'll go to Russia, and we're not so thrilled about their politics. But I think the administration can do a much better job of welcoming people, saying the welcome message. And that's why we need Brand USA, because we're getting the word out as an administration that we want security, and we all want security, but we also have to say, welcome. Welcome all the good guys, no bad guys.
Yeah. So this is, as Congress returns to work, this I'm guessing you want this to be front and center, this reauthorization of Brand USA.
It's our top priority, and we've got huge support from the Senate, got over 100 members of Congress for it, so it's just a matter of getting it on the docket and getting it done. This is a no-brainer. Congress has to do it.
I know, Roger, that the domestic travel is still doing pretty good, isn't it?
The darling of the economy is domestic travel, especially leisure. Leisure has been holding up the travel economy for years. It's very strong. People are traveling. They're getting out there. Business is good. A lot of meetings and conventions important to Chicago. That's all very good. But if we can fix this international piece, we'll continue to be on a roll. We've had 116 months of straight growth of the travel economy, and this blip of going down internationally is costly, and we've got to fix it.
Talk to us a little bit about some of those costs. They mentioned in the opening that there may be some lost, obviously lost revenue, but this might also be impacting jobs in the travel industry. How significant is that impact?
Let me put it in perspective. We've gone up about 1% or 2% in the last year in international. The problem is the world's gone up like 8%. So in 2015, we had a share of the long-haul market of 13.7%. Last year, we had a share of 11.7%. You say, okay, 2% doesn't sound like much. That's $59 billion to the U.S. economy. That's 120,000 jobs. All the talk about Amazon's 25,000-person headquarters, this is five Amazon headquarters. So this is crucial. It's a small amount, and a little tweaking here and there can bring a whole lot of jobs to the United States.
As we close out the interview here, your message to Congress and politicians would be what?
Congress, this is a no-brainer, bipartisan issue. Get it done. Let's get U.S. back on the international travel trail again.
All right, Mr. Dow, we appreciate you being with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Always a pleasure. Love Chicago. Thanks.
Thank you. Roger Dow, CEO of the U.S. Travel Association. You can find more online at BrandUSA, thebrandusa.com. Again, thebrandusa.com. We're going to link out to some of the report here on international travel contracting in the podcast of The Opening Bell a little bit later on this morning.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
On the WGN Associated Bank Market, yes, futures are pointing toward opening gains a little bit later on this morning as we look at the Dow. Dow futures up 187. NASDAQ futures are up nearly 72. S&P futures are up about 21. World markets this morning are generally in the green as well. Now, agriculture and commodities. And Orion Samuelson is here with that. Good morning, Orion.
Good morning, Steve. Soft red winter wheat futures fell to three-month lows yesterday, while U.S. hard wheat futures hit their lowest levels in a decade. The pressure coming from ample world supplies. Corn futures fell to life-of-contract lows on mild crop weather that bolstered confidence in the U.S. harvest prospect, and soybean futures followed the weaker trend yesterday. The USDA, in its weekly crop conditions report, ranked corn at 58%, good to excellent, down a percentage point from last week, and soybeans 55%, good to excellent. That's unchanged from a week ago. So at the end of the trade yesterday, we saw November soybeans down 2 cents. We saw December corn down 8¾ cents a bushel. Livestock futures, lean hog futures up again as Chinese pork prices climbed. Retail pork prices in China hit a record in early August, and it's causing concern among the citizens who are paying too much for their favorite meat protein, pork. Today, opening day at the Sandwich Fair, Sandwich, Illinois. That's a fair that's been going on for well over a century. And something new on the grounds this year, that's the Farm Animal Barn. And that red barn will be filled with an assortment of animals, calves, pigs, sheep, goats, chickens, rabbits, and ducks provided by local FFA chapters. Max Armstrong will be on stage today with the band. I'll be on stage Thursday with the band. Look forward to seeing a lot of you. Sandwich Fair continues through Sunday. Have a great day. I'm Orion Samuelson.
Thanks, Orion. You as well. A couple of stories before we leave you this morning. Ongoing trade fights could cost Nebraska farmers nearly $1 billion in lost revenue. The Nebraska Farm Bureau says farmers are complaining about retaliatory tariffs placed on U.S. exports in response to trade decisions by the Trump administration. The Omaha World Herald reports that soybean farmers in Nebraska could lose $589 million this year, while corn growers could lose $251 million in revenue. Chinese telecom equipment maker Huawei is accusing U.S. authorities of trying to break into its information systems and attempting to coerce its employees to gather information on the company. Huawei says Washington has used unscrupulous means in recent months to disrupt its business. The company faces mounting American pressure, including possible loss of access to U.S. technology over accusations it's a security risk. Now the WGN Associated Bank Market Desk Outlook for Wednesday, September 4th. The U.S. international trade balance for July is due out today. Trade analysts see the deficit narrowing slightly to $53.4 billion, down from $55.2 billion in June. Trade balance report coming out mid-morning. Also today, import and export prices for July. Experts are forecasting imports declining almost $1 billion to $260.8 billion. Export prices expected to increase by more than $1 billion to $207.4 billion. And a couple of other things happening today. The Beige Book out. We'll also see some Fed speakers on monetary policy, including John Williams, Michelle Bowman, James Bullard, just a few of them. Charles Evans as well from the Chicago Fed. Also, Mortgage Banker Association, MBA mortgage application report due as well. So lots of things that could move the markets on this Wednesday, September the 4th.